Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. Last night, President Trump took credit for a resurgent economy, job growth, and tax cuts. He praised the strength and resilience of the American people and called this a new American moment.
The state of our union is strong because our people are strong.
The president appealed for unity, but he also pushed familiar hardline themes of America First and the deadly dangers of illegal immigration. This hour On Point, President Trump's first State of the Union address. You can join us on air or online. What did you hear in the president's speech last night? Did his words bring this country together or deepen its divisions? I've got a great panel with me to talk about the president's address, to unpack all he said. First, from Arlington, Virginia, Yamiche Alcindor, White House correspondent for PBS NewsHour. And Yamiche, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks to be here. I'm
also
happy to be here.
It's good to have you. And with us from Phoenix, Arizona, Chris Buskirk, editor and publisher of the website American Greatness and co-host of The Seth and Chris Show. Chris, welcome to you as well. Chris Buskirk, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. And,
yeah, okay, good, yeah.
And it's good to have you. And from Des Moines.
My pleasure.
And from Des Moines, Iowa, Kathy Obradovich is with us. She's political columnist for the Des Moines Register. Kathy, welcome back to you as well. It's good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Great to be here.
So, first question. I sort of want to get a brief sense from all of you. And let me start with you, Chris. You know, there was a lot of build-up to this speech. The White House used a lot of yesterday to build this as a nationally unifying speech, a bridge-building speech. So that's where the White House set the bar. On that measure, to what extent did the president succeed?
I thought it was a very good speech. I thought it was powerful. It was long. As you know, it was one of the longer states of the unions, but he covered a lot of ground, and I thought he used the time wisely. What I appreciated was that he continued to sound a theme which I think has been sounded again and again in speeches that he's given for the past year, which is that as Americans, we're all in this together. And that is something that I know his critics somehow don't hear. It's something that I see, and I appreciate that he talks about unity. He talks about the importance of citizenship. He talks about civics in a way that we haven't heard in a long time. And I thought that was one of the big takeaways from this speech.
Kathy, to you, Kathy Obradovich, same question. Chris was talking about themes of unity. That's how the White House sort of build this speech. What do you think?
Yeah, well, the president did have some very nice turns of phrase about unity, you know, talking about the American moment and like you said, we're all in this together. But my take on this is that talk is cheap, and from this president and this White House, talk is nearly worthless. Let's see what he actually does. There were some elements of his agenda that actually could be bipartisan. His infrastructure plan, for example. Iowa has lots of crumbling bridges. Iowa has a need for rebuilding its electrical grid. So there are a lot of things that people here could find to like regardless of their politics. But the president builds bridges and then he tweets them down, throws a match from Twitter the next day and burns them down. So we have to see whether this spirit of reaching across the aisle lasts more than just 80 minutes that he was on the stage.
And Yamiche, before I come to you, let's just hear a little bit of President Trump talking last night, calling for unity. Here he is.
I call upon all of us to set aside our differences, to seek out common ground, and to summon the unity we need to deliver for the people. This is really the key. These are the people we were elected to serve.
Yamiche Alcindor, your first impressions about this speech last night?
The two things from the White House perspective, I think officials would look at this speech and say that it was a success largely because President Trump was able to stay on message. He was able to stay on the teleprompter. The embargoed speech that was handed out to most reporters read like almost a verbatim of what he gave. He did not really ad-lib that very much from the speech. And he was able to hit those key topics that the White House had been promising. That's infrastructure, immigration, trade, the economy. He was able to show off some of his guests saying that these are the people that are going to benefit from the tax cuts that we provided. But a careful reading or a careful listening of the speech also shows that it was also some of the same stereotypes that the president has used in the past, cloaked in more eloquent language. He talked about the fact that Americans are dreamers, too, in some ways pitting Americans against the undocumented young people that are hoping to get a fix before March. He also said that he also brought on guests whose families had been hurt by immigrants, somehow implying that immigrants were more likely to commit crimes than other subsets of Americans. He didn't mention the Charlottesville violence. He didn't mention Heather Heyer, the young lady who was killed while trying to protest neo-Nazis. He didn't talk about the spike in hate crimes that have been around the country. And he also didn't talk about the Me Too movement, which is, for a State of the Union speech, is a huge, I think, misstep in that people in this country are talking and having this large conversation about sexual harassment. And the speechwriters that helped President Trump put this together made the calculation that because I guess he is himself accused of sexual harassment and inappropriate sexual behavior, that maybe he shouldn't be speaking to that.
You know, Yamiche, I want to hear a little bit. You mentioned a lot there, and we're going to get to all of that in this hour. You mentioned immigration and what President Trump said about immigration. So let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, on the one hand, he talked about extending an open hand to work with members of both parties, Democrats and Republicans, to protect our citizens of every background, color, religion, and creed. But he also went pretty hard, as you suggested, around this claim that illegal immigration is responsible for deadly, scary violence in this country. Here's a bit of what he said.
For decades, open borders have allowed drugs and gangs to pour into our most vulnerable communities. They've allowed millions of low-wage workers to compete for jobs and wages against the poorest Americans. Most tragically, they have caused the loss of many innocent lives.
So, Chris, let me come back to you and sort of ask you, was there a little bit of a disconnect there? I mean, on the one hand, calling for unity, but then on the other hand, as Yamiche suggested, coming so hard at this theme, which is if not divisive.
No, in fact, my take on it was exactly the opposite. I thought that he was very good on this. I mean, this is an issue where left and right seem not to communicate with each other. You know, from Donald Trump's perspective on this issue, from mine too, from a lot of people on the right, look at this issue and say this is about something where citizenship is important and where we need to. And this is where he sounds the theme of America First. That means all Americans coming together. He doesn't care about rich, poor, black, white. Doesn't care about race. It's about citizenship. Who are Americans? These are the people who elected him. Obviously, not everybody voted for him, but he is president of all American citizens, and it is incumbent upon him to lead the government in a way that puts the interests of American citizens first, meaning above the interests of others, and only then, after American citizens' interests have been taken care of. To think about anything else.
Right. And on that measure, let's listen a little bit more to President Trump on this issue. This was probably one of the lines that has been commented about the most when it comes to immigration. Here we are.
My duty and the sacred duty of every elected official in this chamber is to defend Americans, to protect their safety, their families, their communities, and their right to the American dream. Because Americans are dreamers, too.
Americans are dreamers, too. Kathy Obradovich, I mean, here we are, very close to a pretty serious deadline, a big disagreement in Congress about how to resolve the issue with the dreamers. Did that speech last night on this issue help bring the two sides closer together or not? What do you think?
Judging from the what I could hear of the faint but derisive laughter when the president said that this is a down-the-middle compromise when he was presenting his four-point immigration plan, I don't think so. I think that there's a lot of agreement around the country about making sure to do something about illegal immigration. But Trump is also talking about curbing legal immigration in ways that make people in my state worry about the workforce implications. You have this is a farm state, so farm-related jobs, meatpacking jobs, all kinds of jobs that, in fact, immigrants are filling in a lot of ways. So when you talk about curbing or changing these visa rules, curbing people's ability to bring their families in, those sorts of things will impact the bottom line and the economy in Iowa. Trump did not talk about the really important contributions to our society, to our economy that immigrants bring. Iowa is an old state and our population is stagnant. And one of our biggest economic barriers is having enough workers to fill especially skilled jobs. So, we're looking at that as the ability to bring in people as being important, and immigration is part of that. So you got to look at the whole picture on immigration, and some aspects of Trump's plan won't play very well in Iowa.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're looking at the State of the Union, how President Trump sees where this country is right now, and how you see it. You can join the conversation. Is the president right? Are we in a new American moment? And what does that mean to you? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Chris Buskirk, publisher and editor of The American Greatness, Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register, and Yamiche Alcindor, White House correspondent for the PBS NewsHour, are with me. And let's go to Roger, who's calling from Lake Orion, Michigan. Roger, you're on the air. What's on your mind? What did you hear last night?
Hello, Anthony. Thanks for having me. I'm a conservative, right? So I obviously enjoyed the speech. I thought it was great. I didn't hear or see the sort of divisiveness that people have been talking about, but because I've already dealt with really left-leaning things for the last 8 years before this, So for me, all that stuff was rather difficult. And now I have something for me that's relatively centrist. I mean, when he was originally campaigning, that was hard for me, right? But now he's here, and I got to tell you, I appreciate the man. I think I'm in the construction industry as well, so I understand the crass nature of the sort of person he is, because it's what I deal with on a daily basis. I mean, this guy's not much different than the developers I work with.
Right.
That being said, the thing that I liked about it is, again, the focus on America and American values and laws and that sort of thing. And then the fact that he's offering to give DACA, more than DACA recipients, opportunity. I mean, look, I work in the construction industry, and I got to tell you, I love hiring Latinos because they work. I mean, my God, do they work.
So, Roger, I'm going to ask you, if you would, just wrap up the point, because we've got a lot of other callers to get to. But overall, you like the speech. But when it comes to his message on immigration, what did you hear?
This is what I heard. We still have to take care of the United States, and we still have to make sure that our borders are secure. Perfectly reasonable to me.
Okay, Roger. Listen, we really thank you for that comment. Here's a comment from NSTEF, someone named NSTEF. He wrote this on the On Point website, and he is responding to "Because Americans are dreamers too." He writes, "With that phrase, Donald Trump drew a sharp line between the dreamers who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children and those born in this country. Both alt-right leader Richard Spencer and former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke highlighted that line to their followers." Chris Buskirk, respond to our caller and to what some people might see as reading a lot into that line, "Americans are dreamers too."
Yeah, well, I thought your caller from Michigan, by the way, I'm familiar with the Lake Orion. It's beautiful where he is. But his point is spot on. It's the common sense point. I mean, the person who writes in on the website, I mean, you want to talk about overreading to get from "Americans are dreamers too" to Richard Spencer, at least in my mind, in most people's mind, I think. It's a pretty common sense point to say that the job of the American president is to represent the American people. Right, that's civics 101, and that is what he's trying to do, is to protect our interests as citizens, not just economic interests. That's part of it, sure, but also civic interests. You know, it is citizens who govern the country, it's citizens who vote, and he the president and Congress too needs to make sure that the citizenship remains valuable and unique. And in that sense, there is a distinction between American citizens and the citizens of any other country. Does it mean those people are bad people? No, it just means that they're citizens of some other country, and it's his job as president to make sure that he's protecting American interests above others.
But this speech, I should say, is also about the fact that we're talking about the future of America and the America that we want it to be. And part of the speech, he talks about so-called chain migration, which is whether or not immigrants who come here and work in farms or work in the construction industry, whether or not they should then be allowed to bring over their parents or bring over their siblings to this country to build their America. And he said that he wants to protect the American nuclear family by doing that. Given that his comments about African nations and Haiti, coupled with the idea that he wants immigrants to be here and work, but he doesn't want you to be able to bring over more people to actually build your nuclear family, that's very tough for people to hear. And I hear the idea that there is that he's extending citizenship to 1.8 million people. That's a lot of people, and that's a real give that the president is giving Democrats. However, he's also trafficking in stereotypes. There's this idea that immigrants are somehow coming to this country and trafficking drugs and are criminals and are attacking people, when the figures and the numbers just don't work out. The numbers show that immigrants are not pulling Americans down. They're not the ones that are robbing all Americans. And if you watch the guest that he brought and you listen to the speech very closely, you realize that even if he's saying it in very nice language, he did imply that immigrants are criminals and can be criminals and can't hurt your families.
Well, you're making reference, for example, among the people that he featured in the House gallery, the parents of children killed by the MS-13 gang members. I mean, they were there for a reason, Yamiche, you're pointing out.
Yeah, they were there for a reason. And who wasn't there was Heather Heyer's mother, who was killed by neo-Nazis on American soil. She's an American citizen. Her mother has refused to talk to the president. But there's this idea that Americans need to be protected from immigrants, as if immigrants are hurting Americans. Americans are also hurting a lot of Americans. I'm a reporter who covered police violence and covered a lot of the shootings of young unarmed African-American men. And there was no mention of that. And there are Americans that are brown and black and Hispanic who are looking at this president and saying that he did not speak to their needs. And he's pitting Americans, at least in some people's minds, against immigrants. That said, this speech was about America first. That's how he got elected. So I don't think that if he's going to keep his promises to his voters, he can't change his tone, because Americans elected him knowing that he wanted to build a wall, knowing that he wanted to curb immigration. We are getting to a point where Stephen Miller, who helped helped write the speech, my sources tell me, is getting a lot of his dream proposals. Before this, we were talking about Dreamers and whether or not they were going to be allowed to stay, but we were not talking about cutting legal immigration. We were not talking about saying that you can bring your wife, but your mother's going to have to stay in whatever country you're from. That wasn't the conversation that we're having. But the Republicans won the election, and they're going to be the ones who shape this policy. So I think Democrats are going to have to deal with that.
We're talking about President Trump's State of the Union address last night. I want to move on to some other issues like the economy, foreign policy, also the theme of heroes in this speech. I also want to get more calls in. So let's go to Chet. He's calling from Monroe, Michigan. Chet, you're on the air. What did you hear last night?
Hi, Anthony. Hi. I happen to be a minister, and I happen to be an African-American minister. I'm a conservative, but I do have a problem with President Trump. He's caused all kind of division for a whole year, and then he expects everybody to bow down because he gives a speech. He stayed on script. Now, I enjoyed the people, the testimony people that he had up in the, you know, in the stands, and that was very beautiful. But his actions for the whole year has not been what he was speaking about last night.
And what actions, Chet, are you referring to in particular?
Well, his actions about he went around about dealing with racism. I live not too far from where we have the second largest Arabic population in the world, and you know, in the Detroit, Monroe, the whole area, the three county area, I feel like that we have to take every individual case individually, as far as the Dreamers and the DACAs. Some people need to be let out of this country, and some people need to be able to stay in this country because of their lifestyle. They live a good lifestyle. They haven't committed any crimes.
Got it.
Anything like that.
Chet, I'm gonna move on and thank you for your call and thank you for your thoughts, because one of the things I wanted to get to was what the president said about the economy. He talked a lot about, especially at the beginning of the speech, he really highlighted the economy and took a lot of credit for it. Low unemployment, strong job growth. So here he is talking last night during the State of the Union address, touting the economy and the job numbers.
Since the election, we have created 2.4 million new jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone. Tremendous number. After years and years of wage stagnation, we are finally seeing rising wages. Unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low.
So I'll start with you, Kathy Obradovich. I'd love you to sort of introduce the idea of what he had to say about the economy. There is a lot that's going right with the economy right now. So to what extent can the president, and every president, by the way, is going to do this? If things are going well, of course, they're going to take credit for it. But comment about that. What did you hear when it comes to the economy?
Of course, Anthony, you know, the economy is strong. And as I talk to people about Donald Trump, that is the first thing you hear. You know, I don't like everything he does, but man, the economy is blazing right now. And they give Donald Trump a lot of credit for that. Now, there was a lot of things that he took credit for that really started under Barack Obama's, the job growth, the unemployment, dropping, even some of the stock market, although I do attribute some of that to optimism about Donald Trump's policies. Certainly, Donald Trump can take credit for the early effects of the tax cuts, which are putting extra money in a lot of people's paychecks. So he can take some credit for the economy. Of course, he goes way overboard in what he actually is taking credit for. Ultimately, though, by the time we get to November 2018, I don't think people are really going to care about whose credit it is. People are going to vote based on the economy. we're going to vote based on jobs, are going to look at, you know, this is existing under the current administration, and they're going to put their vote there. One thing, though, that we don't hear that affects the economy and affects the jobs long term and also is a major conservative issue and has been among Republicans for a long, long time is the debt and deficit. And we heard a lot of Trump wanting to spend money on, you know, $1.5 trillion on an infrastructure program, you know, throwing the coffers open and throwing a lot more money at the military, not a word about how he's going to pay for any of that, or, you know, the need for fiscal responsibility. We never heard any of those themes, which are, you know, generally popular with conservatives and, secondly, can have an effect on the economy.
Well, Chris Buskirk, respond to that, because it's an interesting point, the debt, the deficit, fiscal responsibility and restraint. These used to be hallmarks of sort of conservative Republican orthodoxy. As Kathy mentioned, we didn't hear much about that last night. Anything about that?
God, yeah, not much. I think not anything. I don't think I heard a single word on the subject. And it's not only from Donald Trump. We haven't heard conservatives in Congress. We haven't heard liberals in Congress. Nobody is talking about the debt or the deficit. Really haven't for quite a few years. Why? I really don't know. I think everybody has come to the conclusion that the only way you can actually deal with the deficit first and then ultimately with the debt is with entitlement reform, and nobody wants to talk about it. That is, you know, that's reputed to be the third rail of American politics, and so I think that Republicans and Democrats have both decided to ignore it until they can't ignore it anymore. It's irresponsible, unfortunately, but that's where it is, and so people have decided, politicians, Donald Trump, one of them, but again, Congress as a whole as well, have decided we're going to focus on other issues first. This was one of the ironies to me when we were talking about tax reform and we heard Republicans and Democrats both saying, oh, but the deficit, you will not hear that discussion when it comes to spending. You will not hear that the right. Same weeping and lamentation about the deficit when they start talking about the spending aspect of the bill.
Well, let's stick with the economy and take another call. Tom is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Tom, it's good to have you. You're on the air.
Yeah, let me say this. I'm from the city that put the world on wheels, Detroit, Michigan. And one thing that I resented was the fact that, you know, number 45, as I referred to him, says, you know, we're going to rev up the engines. Listen, the engines of the automobile industry have been revved up since they literally came out of bankruptcy. And thank God for President Obama continuing those auto bailout loans, because he said, this is an exact quote, he says, though it's not the popular thing to do, it's the right thing to do. Because had he not, this country would have went over the edge into an abyss of an economic tsunami not seen since the likes of the Great Depression of 29.
So, Tom, it sounds like you're saying, yes, the American auto industry is coming back, as the president claimed last night, but all credit not due to him.
Exactly. And the same thing like with, you know, with the economy. I have been, my investments, I mean, since President Obama was elected, I've made more money under President Obama than what, you know, Trump has done. And the thing that I really resent is this fact, that, you know, that some of these people, all right, they sit there and act like nothing was happening with the stock market until Trump came into office. Listen, that train in terms of the economy and the stock market, it's been rolling down the track for literally almost the last 10 years.
All right, Tom, we got it. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Rick, who's calling from Mystic, Connecticut. Rick, you're on the air. Good to have you. What did you hear last night?
Yeah, hi. Hi, Anthony. It's not what I heard, but it's what I did not hear. In a speech that was something like 80 minutes long, I did not hear one single word about the environment and the problems with the environment, which, in my opinion, is the existential problem of our age. All the other problems take second seat, yet totally being ignored in that regard. And he said some stuff about clean coal, which is sort of an oxymoron. So I would just like to say that his lack of lack of comments on the environment were a travesty.
All right, we got it, Rick. Listen, my panel, Chris Buzker, Kathy Obradovich, and Yamiche Alcindor, we're coming up against a break. But I want to ask each of you, and I'll just start and ask for a really quick answer, Chris Buzker. Our caller was just talking about what he didn't hear in that speech. What was missing in your mind from that speech?
You know, I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if maybe if it was missing, but maybe I would have heard a few more words on it. I would have heard, we heard about America First, we heard about immigration. I would have heard about the value of American citizenship, about what it means, about civic responsibility, both from government to the people and people to the government. I would have liked more on that.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking this hour about President Trump's first State of the Union address and the Democratic response, which we'll get to in a moment. You can join the conversation. What did you think of Congressman Joe Kennedy III and the Democratic response? We're going to listen to a little bit of that in just a little while. Great panel this hour. Yamiche Alcindor, White House correspondent for PBS NewsHour, Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register, and Chris Buzker, publisher and editor of American Greatness, the website. Folks, let's talk a little bit about some of his policy proposals. There weren't a lot of them, but he did talk last night about infrastructure. Here's a little bit of what he said about the need and his desire to invest in American infrastructure.
Tonight, I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investment that our country so desperately needs.
Yamiche Alcindor, you know, infrastructure is often talked about as one of those few areas where Democrats and Republicans can agree. But isn't there a big division in how this would be paid for? Democrats want public money. Trump wants to leverage private investment. Seems like a big gulf between these two approaches.
It's a somewhat big gulf, but on the list of things that Democrats and Republicans might be able to get done this year, infrastructure and opioid crisis interventions are the two big things that most people on the Hill and in the White House think they can actually get done together. Infrastructure was also something that President Trump has a lot in common with Bernie Sanders. I covered Bernie Sanders' campaign, and a lot of times on the campaign trail, he spent long, long parts of his speech talking about infrastructure, talking about roads and bridges, talking about that not only as a way to fix up America and make it safer, but also as a way to put Americans to work, even if these are going to be temporary jobs. And then there's the idea that President Trump, as people are trying to figure out ways to put people back to work, because some of the jobs that the manufacturing companies have taken away are actually automated jobs. There's this idea that people think that Mexico has taken a lot of the jobs out of the Midwest, but essentially it could be that there's a computer that's doing the job that people were doing. But in terms of the financing, I think that this is probably an easier compromise to make than something like immigration. I think that if they can put their heads together, that infrastructure could be a thing that both Democrats and Republicans could run on and say, hey, we were able to do this together.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch that certainly in the months ahead. Let's take a couple more callers. Let's go to Reggie, who's calling from Oskaloosa, Iowa. Reggie, good to have you on the air. Tell us what you heard last night.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you. It's as much as what I saw as what I heard. I am a combat veteran. Both of my kids and my son-in-law are in the military right now. And watching the Democrats' response to when the military was brought up, the heroes that were there were mentioned, and their response or just lack of response just seemed disrespectful to me, which is a theme I have seen over the years. Which is one of the reasons I think the military votes a lot more Republican than they do Democrat. I was a Democrat until I joined the military, and I heard how I was referred to and my friends were referred to.
Hmm. Well, Reggie, thank you so much for that call and for your observation. I'd love to ask all three of you. I'll start with you, Chris. But Reggie just reminds me of, I mean, this is related. Donald Trump really built his speech around the theme of American heroes, honoring a lot of guests in the House chamber who overcame big challenges, a police officer and his wife who adopted a child of a heroin-addicted mother, an Army staff sergeant who won a Bronze Star in Syria, a North Korean defector, not to mention the parents of children killed by the MS-13 gang members. This is something presidents have long done, but what did you think of the use of these American heroes to make his case, Chris? There were a lot of them.
Yeah, this is something that Ronald Reagan started, 35 years ago, using people as kind of real-life examples of the themes that he was trying to develop in his speech. I like the idea. I like making things tangible and real by real-life examples. And there were quite a few of them last night with Donald Trump. I was struck by one thing, and that is that this country has some amazing people in it. You looked at whether it was the police officer from Albuquerque or the two couples from Long Island who had lost their daughters. And I just thought, wow, this is a really interesting country with some amazing people. And I thought as a result of that, that it was very effective. Both it was effective as a rhetorical device, but it was effective for somebody like me. It says, wow, there are some great people in this country.
Kathy, what do you think it added? I mean, Chris mentioned this is something that President Reagan first did when he honored, it was a man named Lenny Skutnik, right? He jumped in the Potomac River to rescue a passenger from an air crash. But Trump seemed to take this to a whole new level. I mean, they just kept coming. There were just more and more.
Well, you know, my editor remarked last night that he was starting to wonder if Trump was going to introduce every single person in the audience. And it did. As the speech went past the hour mark, I was starting to get a little bit antsy, you know, for, you know, let's just wrap this up, buddy. You know, but the people he did introduce were effective in illustrating his points. And I especially like the 12-year-old who took it upon himself to start putting flags on veterans' graves because he had noticed in his community that what wasn't being done. Sometimes it can bring a little bit of lightness also to the speech, although he also, I think, broke a new record for having crying victims of other people in his audience. But, you know, there wasn't much that I could consider to be lighthearted in Trump's speech. There was no humor whatsoever. And so these moments of introducing other people helped, I think, break up the sort of somber, weighty nature of the speech, guaranteed applause lines, of course, and also, you know, bringing some personality along. So I thought it was effective, just maybe a little bit too much of a good thing.
Let's go to Braden, who's calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Braden, it's good to have you on the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Anthony. Okay, so the biggest issue for me, as someone who's young and really wants to see different places in the world, Trump's comments on foreign policy, especially in regards to the U.S. Jerusalem vote in the U.N., he said we need to be working with our friends, not our enemies, implying that people voted against us are our enemies. He said we give them lots of money. He implied that he wanted to cut away money. He sounds like he wants to do international extortion for votes in the UN. And one of the people that didn't vote, that voted against us, most people didn't, was Canada. Canada is no longer our friend. They're our enemy now, according to Trump. It doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it's just rhetoric. That's why I'm asking you guys on the panel.
All right. Well, let's bring that up. One of the things that President Trump said last night was, tonight I'm asking Congress to pass legislation to help ensure American foreign assistance dollars always serve American interests and only go to friends of America, not enemies of America. But Yamiche Alcindor, respond to our caller and his concerns. I don't think the United States, by the way, is on the verge of breaking off relations with Canada, but you take our caller's point.
I take the caller's point that I don't think America is at all on the verge of breaking relations with Canada. But there is this idea that Donald Trump has reordered how American alignments are and has reordered who our friends are, even if it's not so much in that we're not going to break off diplomatic ties, but that we are more consistently finding America on one side of an issue and the people that we think of as our allies on another side of the issue. Think of the Paris Accords and the Paris climate change and the fact that he pulled out of that. There were so many European nations nations that were saying that that was a bad thing. Then you think about trade. Just this week, he was arguing with the European Union, saying that the European Union, that he might retaliate against them because of their bad trade deal, saying that they're not fair to America. The EU, of course, shot back pretty quickly, saying, you know, if we you can essentially try it and see what happens. So there's this idea that while we have are still very much close to Europe and close to Canada, there is this idea that Donald Trump has made American ideals and American values a little bit differently, and has asserted ourselves in the UN differently. You think of course, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and that was an effort that was condemned almost unilaterally by our allies and by some other countries that aren't our allies. So it's something to think about as we look into year two of this presidency and how he's going to deal with foreign relations.
Mm-hmm. Yamiche, Kathy, Chris, I want to sort of shift the focus a little bit. There was a Democratic response. The official response from the Democratic Party was given by Massachusetts Congressman Joseph Kennedy III. He didn't mention the president's name, but he called the Trump administration's record, quote, a rebuke of our highest American ideal, the belief that we are all equal and we all count. Here's a little bit of what Congressman Kennedy had to say.
It would be easy to dismiss this past year as chaos, partisanship, as politics. But it's far, far bigger than that. This administration isn't just targeting the laws that protect us. They're targeting the very idea that we are all worthy of protection.
Kathy, I'll start with you on this one. It never seems to be a fair fight, no matter which party is in power, because the president, of course, has the trappings and the symbolism of everything that's there in Washington, and the opposing party somehow seems diminished. But what did you think of Joseph Kennedy's response?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the rule of thumb for a Democratic response is just do no harm, right? Don't embarrass yourself, and you know, what people will, you know, take what you say as being, you know, sort of the boilerplate party response, and I think that was largely true with Congressman Kennedy's response. What I would have liked to have heard more of, and one of the things that Democrats are talking about in Iowa, which flipped from voting for Barack Obama for two elections and then flipped to Donald Trump, Democrats are sort of soul searching about how do you deal with Donald Trump in this election. And what a lot of the advice has been is don't spend all your time demonizing Donald Trump. Talk about what Democrats are for and what alternatives they're providing. And I think that, you know, of course, it was a response to Donald Trump's speech. So we're going to hear a lot of criticism of Donald Trump and his policies and his directions. But I think he would have served himself more and the party more by talking more about the alternatives that Democrats can provide and trying to help rally people to come out in 2018.
And Chris, from your perspective, from a conservative's perspective, what did the choice of Joseph P. Kennedy III, what does it say about how the Democrats are thinking about how to make their case in this election year?
Well, what it said to me is that Democrats are going back to families that have run the Democrat Party for generations, and if after his speech, Democrats still want to put Kennedy's in front of the American people, I say go for it, because I thought it was rambling and confused, and it was one of the things that it was that type of thing that inspired both the Sanders movement on the left and the Trump movement on the right, which is to say, we don't want these people who have been running these parties for the past 30 or 40 or 50 years, because they're just not very good at it. And he wasn't very good at it. I thought that it was the type of thing that Democrats had to be regretting after he gave his rebuttal.
Mm. Yamiche, I'd love to get your views on the same question, the choice of Congressman Kennedy.
I think it shows that the Democrats, one, want to go back to their roots. The Kennedys are long been a part of the Democratic Party, but they also are very cognizant of the fact that they're not going to just be able to throw in a famous name. There's this idea that he was speaking Spanish, that he was talking about the Me Too movement, that he said Black Lives Matter, that he talked about a new chapter for Democrats. But it's problematic, I think, at least from most of the experts that I talked to, because they say that the Kennedy name shows that they might be going back to just a crutch name to help Democrats make their case, and that they really should have picked someone of color. Of course, the flip side of that is that that the Democrats are also, I at least heard some Democrats comparing him to Obama and saying that he had a fresh face and he was someone that the large part of American people were not familiar with. So this wasn't just throwing in some person who had been in Congress for a very long time. This was kind of giving him a new look and introducing him to the country. So it'll be hard to tell whether or not he takes some new place in the American politics, or whether or not the Democrats say, you know what, we're going to maybe even go even fresher and go push past that and try to elevate some women and some people of color.
We're coming up against the end of the hour, but I want to try to make room for at least one more caller. Teresa is calling from Bradenton, Florida. Teresa, you're on the air. Good to have you. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. I guess I'm really tired of the disrespect that's given to the president. I'm a conservative. I didn't vote for Barack, but I supported him. And I think if we just, his speech last night was very encouraging, I thought. No one's right all the time. But at least if we stop being so derogatory towards each other, maybe we'll get more done. Maybe we'll work together. I don't know.
Well, Teresa, it's a great thought and a hopeful one, and I appreciate you putting it on the table. Chris Buskirk, let me come back to you on this, and just thinking about what Teresa said. You know, we heard earlier in the hour, I think Yamiche made the point that often President Trump will sort of lurch toward sort of being more statesmanlike, and then sort of undermines it a moment later with a series of tweets. Did you feel that the speech last night sort of sets President Trump up differently from this point forward in some hopeful way?
You know, the speech last night, whether we talk about the rhetorical themes that he struck or the agenda and the policies he was describing, I think this is what Donald Trump has been talking about all along. However, having said that, I think he put it he wrapped it up a little bit better than he has in the past. In some of his speeches in the past, he was clearly speaking directly to his base. Of course, that was appropriate during the election. That's who he needed to get out to vote for him. Now, a year into his presidency, I thought that he was presenting it in a way that that maybe was more palatable, that was more accessible by the American people more generally. And I hope people receive it. I took your caller's point. I mean, I did not vote for Barack Obama in either election, and yet wished him well. I can say in my own life, in our church, prayed for him. Prayed for Barack Obama's success. I hope people will follow that example with this president, even if they disagree with
him. All right. I think we've got to end it there. Sorry, the tyranny of the clock. Chris Buskirk, publisher and editor of the website American Greatness. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much.
And Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register. Kathy, thank you as well.
Thank you, Anthony.
And Yamiche Alcindor, White House correspondent for PBS NewsHour. Great to have you this hour. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's it for this hour. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks.